You're listening to BNF Podcast, where we integrate actionable interventions, intuitive therapy tools, mindfulness, and technology for today's modern mental health therapist. Each week, we take a closer look at a niche population as it relates to our monthly theme. Each episode is pre-recorded as part of a live continuing education lecture with online CEUs available at mytherapies.org/BNF. I'm your host, April Neff, LMSW and private practice therapist. Welcome to today's episode of BNF. Hi, welcome to episode 1 of the BNF podcast. Today, we're going to visit this month's theme, attachment, as it pertains to the population expecting mothers and children from birth to 3 years. While we don't generally expect to work with clients in this age population, except through their parents, we do focus quite a bit on this population during our intake process. It can be especially frustrating as a clinician because this is the part of the intake where we need solid, good, rich, and accurate data. But the family isn't willing or doesn't have this information. For instance, in the case of foster care cases or an adoption. Or, due to shame, the information is inaccurate or it's difficult to discuss. So what can you do as a clinician when we don't have the information that we so richly need? We can just attempt to fill in the blanks as we go, or we can explain to the client how important this information is. I often provide psychoeducation to the client or parent from the very first phone call, and press and engage with them about how important getting a rich social history of the client mother's pregnancy, a list of stressors or drugs she may have exposed the child to in utero, and how this will understand the child's stress and how they respond in their behaviors. When the focus is on treatment, treating the client, you can forgive yourself for the shame that you may feel as a parent. And you can focus on the child who experienced that trauma, and you can give yourself, as a clinician, the best chance of bringing the truth to light. So how do we move forward with assessing issues that aren't communicated? What could this look like during an intake? A failure of attachment is often where we see trauma behaviors come to life. In our psychosocial stages, within the first 3 years, we learn whether or not to trust or mistrust the world around us and understand whether it will either help us or it will harm us, which can present in a matter of ways. It can be negative cognitions in any situations that are new or from breaking from our current patterns, transitions, going to school, coming home, going to work, any separations. Can you imagine anything more relevant in psychotherapy today than the phase of life where we learn whether or not to trust or distrust the world around us? We invite you now to sit back. Imagine your next client is struggling with attachment, either as an expecting parent or an early parent who needs help in connecting with their child. Let's go ahead and begin helping this person adjust to this phase of life when they too struggle with a healthy attachment. The concerns the parent may be looking at is the overwhelming stress of having a child and struggling with their own attachment behaviors through life. Any undue stress at this time should be discouraged, and psychoeducation for the mother should be provided entering into your office. From the first session, you're going to start with grounding work. Grounding exercises are fundamental as a way to open and close a session and serve you as a clinician by modeling the importance of staying in a regulated state. The added benefit of creating and forming an opening and closing ritual is the client feels security in your office as to the purpose of the session and the purpose of the place. Each aspect of your session should be an experience that shows the benefit of structure and builds trust. Moving forward, we may need to get a good idea of what attachment looks like in the office. There are 4 known attachment styles: anxious, fearful, avoidant, and secure. Anxious attachment appears in the office as high dependency, a preoccupation with origin relationships in the family, and highly emotional overreaction when those relationships are threatened. When working with anxious attachment in new mothers or fathers, we will see complaints of concern. Am I doing this right? Should I get him vaccinated? What happens if I choose the wrong name? Will my mother ever forgive me? Simple concerns we can advocate to the client, discuss with their doctor, and role play out in session those conversations. Alternately, we can also make a list of different concerns and rule out who needs to process them with the new parent, such as their doctor or another family figure who has children and is often good with advice to the couple. I always keep a list of resources available, such as Parents as Teachers, for developmental questions, and Available is a great grant-funded agency here in my state. A successful Parents as Teachers coordinator, for instance, can process these concerns, validate them, and tell them whether or not they need to follow up with another agency. All these things a new parent needs to hear. With my own family, one of the biggest challenges was when my husband met our Parents as Teachers coordinator. He had a poor association with inviting a social worker into the home and didn't understand the value. This experience is the perfect conversation to have because it builds trust in other workers that are only there to assist you in giving your child a strong foundation. Fearful attachment is marked by a disturbed distress at attempts to engage in meaningful relationships, marked by early physical abuse. This may also present comorbidly or be confused with PTSD. The marked difference may be the age of onset or the amount of time the symptoms have been present. There is no age determinations currently listed for PTSD. However, criteria requires the symptoms for at least 1 month, and the age of onset for reactive attachment diagnosis is 9 months of development and under 5 years of age. Avoidant attachment is characterized by a failure to meet the trust versus mistrust stage of development and learning to be dismissive of attachment. Someone with avoidant attachment characteristics will be strongly independent, refuse any sort of collaboration, and likely to be non-compliant towards treatment and only there, quote unquote, because some other person is forcing them. Developing a sense of trust with you, the clinician, will likely elicit a reactive response as it threatens their fear's dependency on another person. Best practice with working. Avoidant attachment is characterized by a failure to meet the trust versus mistrust stage of development and learning to be dismissive of attachment. Someone with avoidant attachment characteristics will be strongly independent, refuse any sort of collaboration, and likely be non-compliant working with you, the clinician, in treatment and only there because some other person, quote unquote, is forcing them. It's so important to develop a sense of trust with you, the clinician, and it will likely elicit a reactive response as it threatens their sense of dependency on another person. Best practice with working with avoidant attachment is to validate them where they are at. Hey, I know you don't want to be here, but for the duration since you are here, let's use this time wisely. Well, Chris, I know that we're running out of time and you definitely don't want to talk to me today. Be okay with just letting them sit there in that moment and not talk. Just giving them that space and sometimes coloring, doing what they can do to stay grounded in that moment can be the best piece of advice I can give you working with someone with avoidant attachment. Secure attachment is marked by a general sense the needs will be met, a sense of safety. Secure attachment is marked by a general sense that their needs will be met, a sense of safety and confidence in themselves, and marked by security in their relationships. Also noted is the security that basic safety needs, such as food and home, will all be met. Someone with secure attachment will engage in appropriate adult relationships and accept boundaries to be held, and they will trust you until they've been shown that they cannot trust you. In work with you, they'll be open, engaged, and will have insight into their relationships. They may also struggle with their firm boundaries being resisted on when they establish insecure relationships. That being said, they may struggle understanding their partners that have insecure attachment patterns as unreliable, quote unquote, since they've never had to struggle with these issues on their own. So now let's look at interventions. I'm looking at the importance of number one, connection intervals. And I always want to share a book with you. And right now I'm looking at I Love You Rituals by Dr. Bailey. The first piece I want you to take from I Love You Rituals is the three different times that you are going to have this amazing opportunity to establish trust. The first one is the first 3 minutes when a child wakes up. The second one is 3 minutes when you get home from work / school or childcare. That connection where you reconnect together. That 3 minutes is a solid time to give them all of your attention and be present. And the last one is the last 3 minutes when you take them to bed. Now, how do we do that? How do we create an I love you ritual? The four things that you need to have is eye contact, touch, presence, and playfulness. Eye contact is the first way we can show each other that we are all together, we are engaged, and there's nothing else that's more important. If your hand is on a device, you're not showing them that they're the most important thing to you. When you are looking at them and you're expecting them to look back at you, you're building confidence that they matter. Secondly, touch. When you touch each other, you release this crazy chemical in your bloodstream called oxytocin. It's the bonding chemical that neuroscience teaches us is what happens whenever we have this experience where we're touching and bonded to another person. Next is presence. If you're thinking about your shopping list, you are not being present with your child. So ask yourself, am I being present? Am I looking at you? Am I touching you? Am I giving you my full attention? And last, play. I can't even begin to express to you how important play is in your engagements when you're establishing trust. Because when you're learning something, if I tried to intentionally force you to learn a new skill, it would take 300 tries, 300 repetitions, over and over and over of brute force learning to learn a new skill. But if we're playing together and we're having fun, it only takes 20 repetitions to learn something new and make it a pattern in your life. Now, let's talk apps. I love integrating technology in when I can. So when we're looking at early children, I'm thinking 18 months to 3 years, there's a really great app called Breathe, and it's created by Sesame Street, and it goes through and it presents you with different situations where this little blue monster might get in trouble and get frustrated. And then it has you walk through a sequence of touching to first tap on the monster's belly so that he will take deep breaths, and he takes 3 deep breaths. Then while he tries to imagine what he can do to get out of his current situation, you pop bubbles to help him think. So basically all you're doing is giving that little monster space to think, and you're setting it up as kind of like a TV show for them, because I put it on iPhone, Apple, iPad, things like that. But whatever device you have, it's a free app. And then last, at the end, you celebrate because they try whichever pattern that you pick, whichever plan. There's 3 different plans listed after you pop the bubbles. And then they celebrate it because he gets over his frustration. And I love the words that they use in this app where they say the monster looks sad because his mom is leaving or his time for bed and he's a little scared. And I love the keynote words that they use that show emotions, which is so important in building empathy in children. The other 2 apps that I have listed right here are actually created by the Veterans Administration, and it's CPT Coach for Cognitive Processing Therapy. And this app is so integrative. It's free, and you can pull out assignments, worksheets, readings, handouts, and also do simple PTSD symptom assessments. Now they create and put these things out here so that people can reach help, but they always have these great little disclaimers that say, don't do this instead of working with a licensed clinician. Wink, wink. We all know how important it is to make sure that you're working with a licensed clinician. The second app I'm going to talk to you about is called DBT Coach, also created by the VA. It has neat features, including recording your mood, recording your skills, your practice, and it has several different ones you can choose, things you've thought about. You can record targets, feelings, triggers, behaviors that you've had that day. You can record activities, lists of coping skills, such as music, friends, sports, movies, reading, or running. You can journal. You can journal on your iPhone. It's really not that hard. It's no different than sending a text message. There are literally 100 different DBT exercises in 4 different DBT modules. So yes, clinicians, you can use this too. There's actual little short videos of lessons to teach you the skills, assignments, crisis planning to include direct dialing your therapist or 911, and then there's homework. And then there's even a little output where you can invite to share all of this with your clinician. Also on apps, I'm going to suggest a couple of things that may not be thought of, such as Instagram. You can actually go onto Instagram and just search certain types of hashtags that can lead you to inspirational quotes, mental health awareness. I like to look up depression, anxiety, therapist, therapy is cool. There's lots of hashtags that you can use to search things that just put you in a more positive space. And finally, Mood Meter is very similar to the Calm app, but it costs much less. I think it costs $2.99. And it actually starts out as a nice colorful grid to plot where you are at for journaling and check-in and recognize how you can shift your energy up or down. It's nice. It's pictorial. It also has suggestions for TED Talks or quotes if you want to shift your energy into a different space. Again, it's a lot like the Calm app, but it's not as expensive. So, a closing, I just want to say I appreciate you joining me today, and I look forward to interacting on Instagram and Facebook at MyTherapies or through the hashtag SapikaAnxietyTherapist, and strive to respond to every single post. Thank you for joining us. Are you interested in meeting us live? This month's podcast is sponsored in part by the 2019 KCAP Conference on Poverty. The Kansas Conference on Poverty brings together direct service workers, agency/department management, agency board of directors, volunteers, and anti-poverty advocates from Kansas nonprofit organizations and faith-based agencies and government offices. Join us at the Capitol Plaza Hotel in Topeka, Kansas on July 17th and 18th in our live workshops. This year's conference theme is Working Towards Prosperity. I really enjoy this conference. It will be my 3rd year attending and my 2nd year speaking. Each year, I discover new resources and I add them to my referral list. And I make friends with really great people doing things in my state. When you are in the business of solving problems and making change, you sometimes need to recharge your batteries and give back to other workers. We hope to see you live and in real life and welcome you to our community of changemakers. Thanks so much for joining us on BNF Podcast. Check out this week's blog post for relevant links, resources, and homework. If this podcast helps you or your clients, continue to share our work with colleagues and consider purchasing CEUs at mytherapies.org/BNF. Thank you so much for being here and sharing this space with us. Always remember, you are enough. See you next week.